The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
On today's Monday episode of Nothing Major, we are going to preview the beginning of the European clay court swing, starting with Monte Carlo. It's also Masters week. I'm wearing the gear, but for the tennis fans out there, we're more concerned about the Monte Carlo week ahead. We're going to go over the results from the 3-250s on the men's side last week. Bucharest a little bit, Houston, of course, and Marrakesh. Talk about Jessie Pegula winning her first ever clay court title and a big one at that in the 500 in Charleston. That's all ahead on Nothing Major, and it starts right now. Welcome back to Nothing Major. John Isner with the whole crew once again. Stevie Johnson, Jack Sock, Sam Querrey, and the team at SIF Creative has joined us as they always do. So we are back. It's a clay court swing coming up. Monte Carlo, the first massive clay court event of the year, is ahead. We are going to get into that. But first, Sam had a couple rants on a group text. I'm only going to go over one because it's actually, it has a lot to do with tennis. But Sam's take right now is that tennis nutritionists, or just nutritionists in general, are completely useless.
Yeah.
I disagree. Stevie shook his head.
Disagree wholeheartedly.
Jack, where do you stand? Because I feel like Sam might be on island here. Jack, where do you stand?
Can I just clarify before Jack answers? Like, completely, just generally useless.
No, don't go backwards.
That's fair enough. Sam says that nutritionists, I put the word completely in there. That's my bad. He says that nutritionists are useless. Jack, real quick, I just want to see if Sam's completely on an island.
Okay, I think that's completely useless, especially with the amount of information
that's what and I'm access talking about.
You have to things online now, to other people. If you're in a sport specific or a very specific like role for that nutritionist, they're traveling to you and they're helping you, like you have maybe have a lot of like very specific needs that you whatever, then maybe not as much. But yeah, a general nutritionist I think is completely useless.
I mean, I understand if you're a weightlifter, you're like, all right, I'm trying to put on 90 pounds of muscle, okay, but if you're like, why would anyone need a nutritionist? Like, you know, if you're not eating well, like you need the nutritionist to like tell you what to eat. You know that the candy bar is not good. If you want to lose weight, you should go eat like carrots and broccoli. I mean, it's not rocket science. Drink water,
not soda.
There's
more science to it than you think.
Like what?
Of course there is. There's an intake of like fats to carbs to proteins, time of days. Dude.
Not for the average person.
As a resident fatty on the podcast who lost a lot of weight thanks to Christian Locascio, I was on a strict regimen, diet, time of day, you name it. He's done it with multiple people. I'm not going to throw anybody else into my category. Look, it is a science. You have to do it correctly. Because
that's why I said it's a very specific thing. Your everyday person, useless athletes that need it, perfect, like macros and counting the whole thing. Like, yeah, you might need somebody.
With athletes, not with just like Bob Smith that lives down the street.
Okay, so when you said, I thought you were talking about like, you know, tennis specific. So you think there's a lot of application in sports.
I still don't think it's like a huge necessity for an athlete. Yeah. Just eat healthy or not eat healthy. You know what's right and wrong.
Nah, I might have changed my tune. Like, I never had a nutritionist, but like, you're kind of right. Like,
you know,
you had a great metabolism and a great thing. Like, look, try being in my body.
I know the stuff that I eat is garbage. I have the worst diet on the pod.
Yeah, you don't think you could have benefited from a little nutrition?
Yes,
yeah.
I could have, and I know that.
Because you couldn't do it yourself.
I mean, unless the nutritionist is holding my hand and physically feeding me the food, I'm going to cheat on the nutritionist and still eat the other stuff.
I mean, like, you know, like not to eat French fries for your carbs the night before a match, eat a sweet potato, right? Like, people know that.
Yeah, you're an idiot if you think otherwise.
I've had dinner thousands of times with Sammy. This has never crossed his mind.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. All right.
I'm not saying I have a good diet.
Fair enough. Actually, like, I might have been on, I might have, you might have just swayed me to your side a little bit, Sam. Yeah, it's just a lot of, basically, just common sense.
Yeah, I did.
Like, just be disciplined. Don't eat the candy bar. Don't drink the soda at 9 o'clock.
Common sense. I'm sorry to our listener if we have a nutritionist listening to this and an avid member of the pod.
I had a lot more use out of like getting like your blood tested and seeing like what your sensitivities are and all that. And then you can literally just make your own plan. Like, Yeah. Someone being like, yeah.
Because it's different for everyone. Yeah. Exactly right. There is a science to that. Like what you're sensitive
deficient
to.
Deficient in all that.
For Jack, for you, like in what you, as much as you sweated, you needed to replenish what you lost every time you played in hot and humid conditions.
I was different than like people just eating like protein and veggies. And I had to pound carbs, especially if I was playing in like a hot thing, like obviously pasta, like all that, just so I could, have some sustainability out there when I was playing. So. But I also knew that, like, kind of like Sam said, I just figured it out from there.
Sam, I think you swayed me a little bit. You and Stevie are on complete polar opposite sides here. We might dig in this a little bit more, but we're not going to go into it anymore. We're going to talk about the week right now. We're going to talk about the week that was on the ATP Tour and the WTA Tour. Let's start with Houston. A player won the tournament that was on no one's radar, and he should not have been on anyone's radar of us four. He came out of qualifying. We know he's good. He's been top 40 in the world. Jensen Brooksby comes through qualifying, saves match points on a few occasions, and takes the title in rather easy fashion over Francis Tiafoe, 6-4, 6-2. I think I saw that his ranking going into the tournament was like 530. He's had a lot of unfortunate situations happen in the last 2 years. He got hurt with the wrist injury, then he got suspended because he missed three drug tests. I think we all empathize with him that's really ridiculous. He missed about 9 months or a year with suspension. Then he had a wrist thing. Then he had a shoulder thing. Now he seems to be back fully healthy. Jack, what do you think about that? And also, have you any of y'all played him before? I played him once, but Jack, I want to start with you. What do you like about his game?
I think we obviously all know he's got a very quirky game, very unorthodox. His strokes look a little funky. His styles look, but he obviously... Again, I hate to use the thing ball striking, but he does just hit the ball clean. His strategy and like his game, like he does whatever he does very well. And he's able to somehow dictate points. And I felt like he is in very in control of what he does. And I think we could definitely see him back in the top 100 by the end of the year. I went back and I watched the highlights of the final this morning. I feel like Francis just played so tentative and just so like, I don't, was it windy or the court like looked, maybe looked a little slippery cold. Or wet or cold? Okay, it's cold. I don't know. Francis just looked very, not really like he was trying to go out there and win that tournament or that title, like with his style of play where he can usually kind of bully people around and be aggressive. But all credit to Brooksby. He went out there. Like I said, he executes what he does very well. And like you said, John, his very comfortable final. I was shocked at that.
Jensen is a unorthodox player, and especially on those clay courts at Houston, we know how slippery it is. Like the movement is tricky. He's got like the drop shots, the angles, the awkward, just doesn't look like it's gonna, it's kind of like Medvedev ish just the way it looked. Doesn't look pretty, but it's super effective. And you know, playing Francis in the final, he was 2-0 against him going into the final, like pretty convincing wins over him, and got a third one. But he saved match points three times, first round of qualies, second round and semis. Like that's pretty impressive to do in that stretch. So kudos to him. I think he'll has a really good chance to get back in the top 100. I mean, he's just got, 250 plus points in this event. He's got the rest of the year. He's going to be in all the big tournaments, the ATP events where he can, gain a lot of points and a lot of momentum, but good for him. The last few years has been extremely hard, and he's got a great team around him. Ryan Williams is helping to coach him. So just happy to see a kid that kind of had some bad breaks the last, 24, 30 months to win a title and to do it at home in Houston in a friendly environment. So
not to mention like wild cards for this summer, but for the U.S. now, he's probably going to get a lot of opportunities now for more points and everything. So
yeah, that's a good point.
I think he's a lock to get in the top 100 like soon. Just, saving three match points, winning the tournament. Like Jack said, the opportunities are pretty much endless through the summer. He'll get a wild card everywhere. He's like a fun player to watch. He plays like Fabrice Santoro kind of with the two hand volley. Like I really enjoy watching him. It felt like he just rode the momentum all week, saving the match points. It was just like his event to win. He just had something special kind of behind him during the week. And then the finals was he just blew Francis off the court. And I agree with Jack. I didn't think Francis played great. It was a weird final. Jensen went up 4-0 and then Francis got it back to 4-4. And you're like, okay, Francis has figured it out. And then from that point forward, Jensen just blew him off the court, won that first 6-4 and then the second 6-2. So good for Jensen.
Not to take anything away from Jensen, but what Francis is 3-7 in finals. Is that like a confusing stat for you guys? For a guy, I think he's like a big match player, always kind of shows up. You know, we see him at the U.S. Opens and stuff, like take care of business in big moments. It seems like a odd stat for Francis to be 3-7 in finals.
We would have to go back to his previous finals. I mean, he lost to Shelton last year in Houston. I mean, obviously, you know, when you're in the finals, you're likely playing someone really, really good.
Somebody good. But, I mean, his finals are, you know, Houston a couple times, Cincinnati, Tokyo, Estoril, Vienna, another Estoril. Yeah, I just feel like, you know, Francis is – he's got that, like, you know, aura around him. I feel like when he gets to those big moments, he just is going to get it done. I don't know if that's just a me thing or – I mean, obviously, the stats don't back that up.
Yeah, it feels like that. He is a big match player. I think in particular because everyone has seen him play in these massive matches at one of the biggest stages in tennis, the U.S. Open. But prior to a few years ago, he would a lot of times like play great and lose these like classic 5-set matches in big Grand Slam tournaments. Like I think he first got over the hump. He beat Tsitsipas in a big match at Wimbledon some years ago. Obviously he beat Rafa at the U.S. Open, but you know, he lost to Fed one time at the U.S. Open in 5 sets, like where the whole world's watching him. We know he plays well, but he always would fall a little bit short, but he is a big match player. I think he'll turn that around. The final thing, it's hard to win a final. I mean, not many players have a, you know, unless you're talking about like the greats, it's hard to be over 50% in finals. I mean, some random players do have that, but again, it's tough, but I think he'll be fine. He certainly likes Houston. As much as we were lauding Houston last week, if there's any beef I have with that tournament is when it rains, whatever they do to that center court, you think like rain is going to make the court stickier. It turns into an ice rink in Houston. Like, and I hated it. Like last year I played, it was rain. The last year I played in my career, like I didn't know what to do. I panicked. I wore hard court shoes. I went out there thinking like, maybe that's going to help, but it didn't help. But that court looked slippery in the final. It looked like super glossy, and Jensen seemed to handle it better.
I was commentating 2 days last week for Houston, and I mentioned on air that Houston is for fans, best dressed fans of any tournament all year long. And I got like ripped for it.
I'd say Wimbledon's up there though as well.
I would say Queens are that.
Wimbledon is like just the Royal Box. Yeah, yeah. Like everyone else is just,
I would say Queens is pretty well dressed.
Like top three dressed events, it's right. Yeah, Houston's up there. Yeah, Sam, that's a valid point. I'm sorry. Sorry,
Houston
for
sure is up there.
They have the Tootsie's fashion show midweek that players participate in. I wasn't watching you call the match, so apologies.
Should have called us in.
All right. Look, congrats to Jensen Brooks. It's awesome to see him back. As we mentioned, he's been through a lot lately, and to win his first title in Houston is a huge effort. We're going to go to someone else who also, there were two first-time winners on tour this week, and this happened in Bucharest. Okay, we probably weren't paying too much attention to Bucharest, but Flavio Caboli from Italy went into Bucharest on a 7-match losing streak and leaves Bucharest with the title. We spoke about this a little last week when I won Miami. I was playing like crap before that tournament. You can turn things around very quickly on tour. Caboli certainly did that and beat a very, very good clay court player in the finals in Baez. So the Italian Caboli is someone who is like a real trendy pick to maybe even like break out this year. Hasn't happened. Do we think, just real quickly, Jack, I'll start with you again. Do you think this could be something that obviously he can build on this, but do you think this could, spur him on to some like really big results on the clay court season the rest of the way through the French Open?
I think so. I remember watching this guy last year somewhere, and I thought he was like before like Fonseca and stuff, I was like, this dude is like the next guy. Again, the company On, obviously they pick him very well. He's another On guy, and he's already top 40 in the world, and he's now just won a tournament. I think that's only gonna help him the rest of the year, or the rest of even the clay court season. I think he probably, the confidence he needed from one awesome week like that, and then probably off to the races now would be my guess, because the guy is very good.
I think he's really good, but I'm not gonna give him the off to the races. I think we'll just win some matches at like Madrid, Rome, Monte Carlo, and like hover around like 40.
Yeah.
I like him though. I hope he proves me wrong. Yeah. I hope he proves me wrong. But that's what, if I had to make a choice one way or the other, I'm leaning with that.
We could set an over under.
I'll take over
under.
Under.
All right. There it is. 33.5. One more event that went on, which is not on the ATP Tour calendar, the UTS event in Nîmes. that was played in front of 12,500 fans. This massive, it looked like a coliseum. I guess they're calling it like an amphitheater in Nimes, and actually looked really, really cool. I like what UTS is doing. I like that they don't have the doubles alley on the court. Players hit shots around the post. Casper Ruud won it. He loves clay courts. We know that. He took home $300,000 for winning the event. I'm assuming he also got an appearance fee as well. So very lucrative week for him. So he taking home $300,000 just by winning the UTS event is the same amount of money that all three of the winners won combined from Houston, Marrakesh, and Bucharest. So, I mean, like, what do y'all think about UTS? I've been kind of lukewarm on the event. I think they really knocked it out of the park with this one in Nimes, and the fans were into it. It was great. They had a lot, of course, had a lot of great talent. Casper, Rublev, Dumanur. I've gotten roasted for saying is Dumanur apparently or something. No.
Is it actually
manure?
All right, Dumanur. Ben Shelton, as I mentioned. So, like, what do y'all think about this particular UTS event in Nimes? Sam, let's start with you.
It was unreal. The amphitheater, the photos. It looked as close as to what you get from like a gladiator back in the day in the like current day tennis. And they're like UTS. They're strategically picking good weeks, good days in the calendar. I was kind of with you, John. If like you asked me this question 3 years ago, I'd be like, it's all right. It'll probably fizzle out. But no, it's like, it's still going. The events seem to get better and better. So, I mean, the prize money is massive. The fans love it. They're like one-day events. And they're turning into like, if you live in the region where it's being played, like a must-watch ticket or a must-watch like view for these people to go go check out. So I think it's cool and good for Casper.
Stevie, Jack.
I'm with you guys. Like, I did not like the idea of it a couple years ago, but you know, the scoring and the serving and stuff haven't really grown on me. But the event itself is growing on me. I mean, just to look at the turnout there, I think it's, like Sam said, extremely smart for these guys to do it in one day fashion. Like, get everybody that wants to watch tennis there on one day. You know, sometimes we feel as if these tournaments that stretch out for 7 days, 14 days, you know, you just spread out the fans over the course of a week or 2 weeks, and to get everybody there in that amphitheater, you know, 12,500 people, it looked incredible. And the photos of Casper holding up like the lightning bolt at the end was was a pretty sweet photo to like have that, you know, go on the wall and be a trophy. I thought it was pretty sweet. So it was a great event, and you know, it shows because the level and the talent of guys that they get is pretty impressive week in and week out.
Let's move on to the WTA side of things. Last week, the Charleston WTA 500 event went down, which myself, Stevie, and Sam spent two nights there each. You know, promoting the tournament, I guess we were called ambassadors of the tournament. I was there last year. We had a lot of time. Anytime you get a chance to visit Charleston, let alone if there's a tennis tournament going on, you always kind of jump at the opportunity to do so. Jack shaking his head in agreement. He's got some ties to Charleston as well. So we had a lot of fun there. We were asked who we thought was going to win. I'm going to toot my own horn. I think I said Jesse because I thought, you know, just like.
You did not.
No.
No, keep that in there.
No, but it's in there. It's in there. I did say Emma Navarro was going to win, but Jesse took a lot of momentum. What I did say was that she took, like Danielle Collins last year in winning Miami, straight from a hard court, went to Charleston and won. Jesse, I apologize. Thank you for setting the record straight. Jesse lost in the finals of Miami, as you know, and then went straight to Charleston with, you know, no practice on clay and takes the title there. I feel like that green clay in Charleston, it plays more like a hard court. It's not like a European red clay court. And Jessie was able to just kind of do what she does, stand in the middle of the court and redirect the ball. You know, so she had a big win and a big tournament. She took out Kennen in the finals, we've seen it lately of Kennen. She's starting to play a lot better. So that was a big result, but congrats to Jessie. Let's talk about our experience in Charleston and what we thought of that tournament. What Bob Moran and Ben Navarro are doing with that tournament in Charleston. I mean, I'll just say it real quickly. The tournament's amazing. And crowds they have for a qualifying. They just do a great job promoting our sport, promoting the women's game in Charleston. Sam, why don't you talk about your experience there?
Yeah, we were there on Sunday of qualifying, walking around the grounds. You would have thought it was a final. It was packed with people. The grounds are immaculate. The field is incredible. The player area, you know, like where they eat and stuff is awesome. I'd never been to Charleston downtown. So cool. I was always jealous that we didn't have a men's tournament there. And now I'm even, I don't even play tennis anymore, but like I'm more jealous that the guys don't get to go there because it is incredible. Bob Moran and Ben Navarro like crushing it for tennis, especially on the women's side. And I think I saw too, starting next year, they're like doubling the prize money. So like they're going to be like kind of the same level as men's 500. And they didn't need to do it, I think, until 2032. So they're just like right away next year making a massive impact on the women's game, and good for them.
All right. Well, I'm gonna let Stevie, I'm gonna let you go next. And you were the one who actually to correctly call Jesse. It's not me.
Thank you.
You know, I guess what I'll ask you, Stevie, do you think it's hard to quickly transition from hard courts to clay? I mean, that's a quick turnaround. I mean, that's like a couple day turnaround. Is that really difficult, or is that a little bit overrated, that transition that I think a lot of fans and a lot of players talk about?
I think it's so overrated. Sorry, I just had to say that.
Okay.
Yeah, gosh, it's so annoying. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, yeah.
So
okay,
overrated.
Okay. You want to let me give my reasonings, or should I just be quiet and you can continue your angry
I'm
morning?
On your team. I'm on your team. I just was pumping you up.
When I won Houston twice, I practiced 0 days on clay going to the tournament, coming from Davis Cups, etc. The years that I was like at home practicing on clay, I would lose first round every year. So, you know, it was more for me to get there on clay, just to get, feel the balls, feel the courts, just kind of feel that the surface underneath you. And then for Jessie's sake, you know, she had just made finals in Miami. She's had a great year so far. For her, it's to go out there and compete. You win your first match, you win your second match, you just kind of get the ball rolling. And confidence is so important. So once you get those first couple matches under your belt, then you feel right at home. So I think I would have a different tune if I were to never play a clay court match and then, you know, go start in Rome maybe. Maybe I'd like to have a couple days of practice. But when I'm playing a bunch of other Americans who have no idea what they're doing on clay in Houston, I felt pretty comfortable that my movement was not going to be the issue. So I don't think it's that important. I think, you know, if you know how to play on clay, you can pick it up quickly. Like we can all pick it up as quickly as the next guy, and we just get a little bit better. It's like riding a bike. You just never forget. You just get a little bit better each time you get out there.
Jack.
Yeah, I thank you for using the word overrated. I think that the exact same. I think anytime we've all played on every surface enough. It's not like you're going out, you're like a newborn baby on like clay courts. You have no idea like what to do. And like, you've been doing it since you were a junior. Now you're at the professional level. We play enough tournaments on it. So I think the time needed to get used to it is minimal for people at the pro level. And obviously just showed with Jesse turning around and winning. So always was fine with literally a day, maybe two of practice on clay courts before playing, or even going right into it. But
she now has 25 wins on the year. That's number one on the Hologic WTA Tour, and she now will become the number one ranked American as she takes over Coco Gauff, and Jesse will rise to number three in the world as the number one ranked American. So she's on a heater so far this year. Awesome for you know, awesome for us. We're all big fans of Jesse. She's an incredibly nice person, and certainly has a lot of momentum heading into, I imagine, Madrid will be her next tournament. Don't exactly know her schedule, but you know, she can play well on all surfaces. She just proved that. I mean, clay's probably not her favorite surface. The green clay is a little different than the red, but she's going to go into Europe and those big tournaments with a lot of momentum. Sam, if anything else to add from Charleston and Jesse Pegula going forward, anything?
No, we're going to do Gossip Corner, but we're ending Gossip Corner because it just didn't take off like I thought. Only gossip is Wozniacki's pregnant, but it's not gossip because she let everyone know.
Okay.
I did yesterday. I want to quiz Isner on something right now. You know, like Gen Z terms?
What we call this Quizner. Wow.
Okay. I want to see it. I'm going to give you a term, Gen Z term. Awesome. You tell me what it means. First one. Slay.
It means like crush it.
Jack, you can verify because you probably know the answer.
I know that one.
Yes. Yeah. There's multiple meanings of slay, but yeah, that's one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Jack will verify because I'm also lost here with John.
Slay. You got that one, right? Next one. Bet.
Like, I got you. Like, yep. It means like, yep. Like cool or something. So yeah. It's like bet.
Probably, yeah. You got it.
Wait, Sam doesn't even know the answer to his own questions again?
I know the answers, dude.
I mean, was I right, Jack? Was I right?
Yeah. Bet. Like,
all right. Next one, Riz.
I'm. I can.
John's
I can,
got no
I can
Riz.
Only guess. Okay. It's like aura. Is it aura?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This context clues right there.
I gave that away.
I wasn't gonna...
Next one, sus. Like,
that's suspect.
Oh.
Like his back. All right.
Yeah, yeah, that one's stupid. What about bussin? Bussin. B-U-S-S-I-N.
I don't know. I mean, the only thing I think of is like the podcast, Bussin with the Boys. Like, that's how they spell it. And it's like chilling, maybe?
It's because they're in a bus.
I actually don't know. What does this mean, Jack?
Yeah, you could. Yeah, how it depends how you. Yeah, bussing.
I don't know. I guess we need a fan to.
You can use Gen Z fan.
I should have had the definition with me, but
you can use it. You can use it. I'll leave those off.
Mid.
Oh, so like not good. Average.
Wow.
Average. Like yeah, yeah.
Last one. Simp.
Simp. Mm. I've heard that term. He's like a loser or something. Like he's a simp or something. You know? Like he's a loser.
Yeah, that's kind of close, right, Jack? Like you're
again, you can use it multiple ways, but like simp can be in a naughty way. But yeah, simp is also you can also just be like it's also could be short for like sympathy. You're showing sympathy towards somebody. Like you're like dude's a simp.
Oh. All right, you actually did better than I thought. Yeah. Good job. That's all I got.
That hard. I should have gotten Riz, short for charisma.
Riz. Riz is a good. Yeah. It's like the best
I
one too.
I have anti-Riz.
Yeah, you're anti-Riz.
You have anti-Riz.
Yeah, that's- Fair enough.
Isner the Rizzler. Right.
The Rizzler. Thanks for that. You know, impromptu little segment there, Sam. And that took place of of Gossip Corner. I didn't want to leave Gossip Corner.
It sure did.
Just like I feel.
The Gossip Corner is off the pod.
Done. Off the pod. I want to talk about something that Carlos Alcaraz said, a quote of his, which I found pretty interesting. It might be something that Sasha Zverev was feeling as well, and he was. He revealed that the pressure to overtake Jannik Sinner because he's out for 3 months as the number one ranked player in the world adversely affected his performance. And so this is Carlos's quote right here. It says, a lot of people are asking me or are telling me that I have the chance to become number one if Jannik is not playing. So probably that pressure has killed me in some way. Are you surprised to hear that from Carlos? Like I particularly am. I'm surprised to hear him open up like that. I love that he is opening up about it. But as we all know, he and Sasha or Alexander Zverev have not done themselves any favors with the suspension that Sinner is on right now. So, Stevie, are you surprised to hear that from the stud that is Carlos Alcaraz?
Yeah, super surprised. More so in the fact that as athletes, generally you keep that type of stuff like, you know, kind of within just because you don't want to give yourself or your opponents any ammo or any, you know, feeling of doubt that you are having in your game. But I like the fact that he does open up about it because it gives us an insight into what he has been feeling the last few months or, you know, the last few tournaments, at least struggling with his tennis, maybe the highs and lows and not doing so well during the Sunshine Double here in the States. So I like the fact that he's opening up and I think, you know, being honest about what he is feeling and the pressures that he is facing, which we don't often get from athletes in the media world. It's a lot of cookie cutter answers. I got to try harder. I'm going to go back to the drawing board, yada, yada, yada. But I like this from Carlos. And I think that's what makes him very, maybe not relatable, but, you know, for the fan to kind of get behind him and support him. Even though he is one of the best in the world.
I think fans and people always appreciate seeing the vulnerable side of athletes and people they look up to and that they like to watch. So I think any info like this and intel, kind of what's going on inside an athlete's mind is always going to be talked about and in the news. So I'm surprised a little bit as well. I don't he and Alex Zverev, they don't seem like ones that would obviously be saying this to kind of like look, not for an excuse, but like make up for maybe some results they weren't expecting. They thought they'd do better. I think even as fellow players, always nice to and cool to see other guys open up and other, you know, women's athlete open up. But I think, I think Alcaraz is probably a lot more going on in the mind, as we all know, than people think. So yeah, it's cool to hear.
I think that quote from Carlos is actually a good little segue for our next segment, which we are going to go over the big clay court swing that culminates, of course, with the French Open. It all starts right now with Monte Carlo, but we're going to talk about the big four events, the three Masters events, Monte Carlo, Madrid, Rome, then, of course, the French Open. On the ATP side, like who do we think is going to have the most clay court wins throughout the swing? Who's going to have the most titles? So, Jack, I want to start with you. Who do you favor in these big events? It all starts with Monte Carlo right now.
It's hard to go against Alcaraz on the clay. Just the way he plays and everything. Even if the pressure is getting to him to get to number one, Casper Ruud's always going to be a contender late in these tournaments. Most likely, the guy is unbelievable on clay and a center out. You know, it's kind of more open for guys to get in there and maybe win some titles. But I'm gonna have to just go with Carlitos. I think Alcaraz is gonna have a lot of wins, probably a couple titles pre Rome. And I don't even know, is Sinner then the favorite as soon as he comes back? I'm gonna go with Alcaraz for the first couple as my favorite. And I honestly think Sinner hasn't lost a step, and he comes in and kind of just balls out again like he was.
I think if we're gonna add like all four of those events, who's gonna accumulate the most points of all four of them? The correct answer is Casper Ruud. Like there's no one that's the correct answer. Casper Ruud will accumulate more points through those four tournaments than any other player.
I'll take the field.
He might not win one, but he's going to
get it. I'll take the field.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Bet. Bet, bro.
Yeah, bet.
It's just like we just witnessed what happened like Indian Wells and Miami. There's just no – you can't answer this question. There's no one that is like dominant like Rafa. And so even if we're going to like give our picks on who we think is going to like win events right now, you're just like guessing. It could be anyone at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I had to pick winners, I think Tsitsipas has a good chance. He's won Monte Carlo twice, won it last year. Why not? He's got the new racket, I think, still. He's in a place that he's comfortable cruising around in his Aston Martin that I've seen all over X, through Monte Carlo, which is pretty sweet. But other than that, I think Carlitos wins Madrid in his kind of home country. And then I would think I like Sinner's chances to win the French after getting a tournament in Rome, kind of under his belt. So I think he'll win the French. So I think he will accumulate the most points. I think in just because he's going to win the French, so that's just a big number, but he hasn't missed any time, right? Like he's missed tournaments, but he could still be practicing and training every day. So it's not like he's going to just pick up a racket for the first time on Saturday before Rome and then, walk out there. So he's going to be ready. His team, this is basically just a 3-month offseason for him. I bet he'll come back and just not miss a beat in those first couple events.
I'm going to go like super chalk here. I think it's Alcaraz just based on how well he played at the French Open last year, seeing him in full flight at that tournament, but also a player that we haven't mentioned who's been stubbing his toe as of late the last couple months is Zverev. I mean, super comfortable on clay. It's probably his best surface. I think. And so I think it's Alcaraz or Zverev. If he can turn things around, he's had some time to get ready after Miami before Monte Carlo. So we'll see. It does seem like it's wide open though. And, I don't know. Is there anyone like outside of the top 10 that you guys see possibly winning one of these tournaments? Not the French Open, maybe winning one of these Master Series events. Sam, is anyone on your radar?
It brings a lot more guys into play watching the first two Master Series of the year, watching guys that unheralded kind of win. So there's a whole number of guys that could win it. Maybe I'm just stuck in the past, but I just keep thinking that the top dogs are just going to go out there and take care of business. Whenever the tournament starts, I forget about what happened the week prior, and I just assume that Sasha and Carlos and Casper and these guys are all just going to get to the end, and they're just going to be the four of the top, eight guys in the semis, whatever. So I still think it's going to be one of the top guys that we assume is going to win that are going to take these big titles.
We saw that last year Rublev won Madrid. Just side note, we spoke about this a little bit, like Safin's coaching Rublev, and I've seen these videos on X. How smooth is Murat Safin?
I haven't seen it yet, honestly.
Yeah, he's got the little glasses, and like he's wearing these baggy clothes because he doesn't give a crap what he looks like. I mean, he's like, his aura is off the charts. So smooth, like the little goatee thing
it's
going
off the
on.
Charts. It's pretty good.
Like hands down the smoothest coach in the world right now, right? Like there's not a close second.
Like I would love to see John.
Yes, look at that. Thank you,
I would
Jack.
Love to see John cruise around so Cleveland like Park with that.
Yeah, there he is. Look at that. That's got to be like relaxed Rublev. Rublev's like so high strung. I feel like when the practices will be fun now, Rublev will be like laughing a little bit more. Like I think it's going to be good.
I'm bullish on it. I'm bullish on the partnership just because of how smooth that guy is.
He's looking like Johnny Depp vibes or something a little bit, dude, like with the outfits. He does look
like Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
If you were a director, would you just hire him right now to play any part in your movie?
Whitney, like a good like Bond villain.
Yeah, same.
Before we wrap this, the big tournament at the end of the clay court season, we all know is Roland Garros. Let's give our Roland Garros winner our choices from the men's side right now. Who's gonna lift that trophy at the end of the 2 weeks in Paris? And Sam, I want to start with you.
I'm sticking with Casper Ruud, and I don't feel confident about it.
I'm gonna go with Sinner. He's fresh.
I'm gonna go with Carlitos and pray that he's on the other side of the draw than Sinner for the semis.
God, I want to go different than you, Jack, but like I can't.
You're gonna go with your boy Sasha.
I will go Sasha. Yeah. He's played so well there last year, and he's super close. So Jack with Carlos, Stevie with Sinner, Sam with Casper Ruud, two-time finalist there, and I'm going with Zverev. So actually, Sam, I don't think your pick's bad at all. All right, that's a wrap on the Monday show, everyone. Appreciate you tuning in. We have a lot ahead later this week on our Friday show, so please tune in for that and stick with us. We're having a lot of fun doing this. So thanks for all your support, and we'll see you next time.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.